We're in the midst of a series on relationships and specifically looking how do we build relationships within the church that we ourselves and that others we are connected with in community might grow into maturity of faith. And as I've said throughout this series, that certainly our hope is that we would build this sort of relationships between us within the church, but we can't help but as we experience God's grace in the work of Christ, that we would also see this impacting relationships in all areas of our lives as well. Before we really get into today, I was inspired somewhat by some of the commercials that we see for medications about there having to be disclaimers alerting people to potential risks when you are taking certain medications. So I just want you to know that it may be necessary for your loved one to consult their physician before you begin to apply today's message to your life. This sermon will encourage you to admit that you've been wrong and to seek forgiveness, and for some, their hearts may not be strong enough for such a drastic change in action. Now, we kind of have some nervous laughter around that, knowing that maybe this might be a little too close to home. But I ask us as we get into today's message, what is our faith supposed to lead to? What does it mean for us to be Christians and to live out this word and this faith that God has given us? As Christians, are we pretty much just like everyone else as we walk about our daily lives? Sure, we know we head to eternity when we cross from this life to the next. Sure, we know that if stuff really goes bad, we can turn to God and ask for help. But is there more substance to that when it comes to us living lives as Christian? Is it just a crown that we get at the end of our lives and a little encouragement when life gets tough? Or is this something more that we are called to? Jesus tells us that part of his purpose in coming to this world is to bring fullness of life for his followers. So we aren't just supposed to live lives every day that look like everybody else, and we just have a different destination at the end. Jesus' plan is to transform this world on this side of heaven as he begins to transform the hearts of Christians, that we would know ourselves so touched that we would live with such a character and quality that those that we share relationship with will see that transformation within us and be more attracted to Christ. As we live this out, as we let Christ change us more and more, we begin to see that this world can be transformed by the ripple effects of what happens when Christians allow their hearts in lives to be transformed by Jesus. When we live transformed lives by the grace Jesus pours into our lives, we find ourselves experiencing God's mercy because of the cross of Jesus. And we know that even when we deserve punishment, Jesus gives us goodness in love. So why is it so hard for us to live transformed lives when it comes to this area of admitting that we haven't done it perfect? We know that we all make mistakes, but why is it so hard to own that at times? As Christians, we can't simply take for granted and say, well, I know God has forgiven me because I've prayed for that forgiveness. That is a wonderful thing, and we should thank God for it, but that asking God for forgiveness doesn't end our responsibility when we've done wrong to another. We should be able to let mercy lead us to a place where we are known for admitting we were wrong, seeking forgiveness, and seeing what we can do to make it right. All right, so I admit we've kind of jumped into the deep end really quick this morning, so I want us to consider some of the passage before we think about this hard stuff again. So what do you normally think about when you hear Zacchaeus? Does anybody sing the song? You remember that song? Yeah, about the wee little man. If you've heard my testimony before, you knew that that I didn't grow up in a Christian family. We didn't go to church that often, but kind of what God used to draw me was when we moved to a house that backed up to the Methodist church, and it must have been one of the days that I showed up in elementary school that Zacchaeus was talked about, because when I hear about Zacchaeus or when I read this passage, immediately in my head I see the flannel board with the little tree that got stuck up there with Zacchaeus in it. What is remarkable about this passage? Is it Zacchaeus' height? Is it the fact that he climbed a tree? Or is it the way that his life was changed? We're told that Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. And so how this worked in the time when Rome oversaw Israel was that a Roman official would put out bids for the chief tax collector. And so whoever had enough money to win this bid would win the work of being the chief tax collector. So Zacchaeus would have already been wealthy before he started this work and was able to put a bid in for this position. And one of the things that made the tax collector so hated was that Rome would allow people native to the places that they were ruling over to bid for this position. So Zacchaeus, at least by birth and by culture, would have been Jewish, and the people of Israel did not like the fact that people like Zacchaeus were doing the bidding of an outside empire. Not only were they viewed as traitors because of this, but the way that Rome would entice, and the reason that you would want to bid on such a position as the chief tax collector, is that you were told what you needed to pay Rome, but you essentially were allowed to collect as much as you could squeeze out of people. And so Zacchaeus' wealth was likely built off of kind of this unscrupulous taxing of his own people. And we see the reaction of the people when Jesus goes to be with Zacchaeus. We're told that they grumble that Jesus would go and spend time with somebody like Zacchaeus. We don't know if Zacchaeus walks away from this work as a result of his conversion to Christ, or perhaps he just continued in his position but did so more justly than he had before. But what we do know from this passage is that he had a desire to pay back anyone who he might have wronged. And we're likely talking about a large sum of money, because he both commits half of his wealth to the poor, and he said that he would pay back four times what he has wronged anyone. So we're talking about a large sum of money for someone who we're told in verse 2 was very wealthy. His conversion to Jesus was costly. What really strikes me about Zacchaeus and Jesus is the way that Luke tells it in the immediacy that we see in these verses. We see an urgency about God's love breaking into his life. And as Jesus calls to Zacchaeus to come down immediately, Jesus also says, "I must stay at your house today." Not only does Zacchaeus respond at once, but we're also told that he welcomes Jesus gladly into his home. In our own lives, what about the closeness in the immediacy of Jesus is important for you? It can be easy to wonder at times what Jesus thinks about us, because we don't always sense that he's as close as we're told he always is. The reality is that Jesus is always right there with us, because as God, he is everywhere. But we don't always feel that, do we? I think that part of the reason that maybe we don't feel that is that Jesus will not force himself into our lives. Jesus desires the same fellowship with us as he did with Zacchaeus. But even though he declared an urgency about his desire to be with Zacchaeus that day, Zacchaeus was still needing to accept that invitation and welcome Jesus into his home. Jesus said, "I must be with you," but Jesus does not force his way into Zacchaeus' life, and he does not force his way into our life. I hope that as Christians, we all give space to scripture reading and to prayer on a daily basis, but we need to be careful that this activity doesn't just become a duty, just something to check off the list. Well, if we want God's blessing, then we need to kind of throw God a bone and spend some time reading a couple verses and thanking God. One of the things that should happen in this time that we spend regularly with God is an intentionality about making room for Jesus in our hearts. Again, he won't force his way into our lives, and he calls to us every day. But do we welcome him gladly, as Zacchaeus did? What are the consequences for Zacchaeus as he opens his home as a place of hospitality to Jesus? I'm not so sure why we get stuck on his height and the fact that he had to climb a tree, because this is the part of this telling that Luke gives us that is really so phenomenal. What happens in the heart of Zacchaeus in his interaction with Jesus is remarkable for the transformation that is produced. Jesus does not play by the world's rules, so that when he says that salvation has come to Zacchaeus' house, I don't believe that Jesus is saying that he has paid enough to earn his salvation. This salvation that Jesus talks about showing up in Zacchaeus' home on this day was not like his position as chief tax collector. He didn't win it in a bid. Salvation was the gift of Christ's presence and love in his house, in his life, and in his heart that day. And what I believe brought salvation was Zacchaeus' openness to receive Jesus gladly. And so this willingness of Zacchaeus to so generously give of his wealth was not buying the salvation that came to him that day, but was a result of the way that being close to Jesus and welcoming him near transformed the way he thought about what he had, transformed the way that he looked at other people. No longer were the people he collected from just ways to accumulate wealth, but it seems he began to see them for people of worth, people that he had harmed, people he had done wrong. And by being near to Jesus and the effects of God's salvation in his life, we witness in Zacchaeus the impact of a heart changed when Jesus is welcomed in. What is the specific impact and transformation that we find modeled in Zacchaeus? It's the way that he interacts with others and is transformed because of his encounter with Jesus. If we leave today and say, "I want to be like Zacchaeus," it's not about going home and climbing a tree. It's about welcoming Jesus gladly closer to you and letting that impact the way that you interact with others. What Zacchaeus offers us today is that he admitted what he had done wrong, and he expresses a willingness to make it right. Was the last time that you apologized to others on a consistent basis back when your mother made you do so? We all know the heart work that happens when mom says you had to go apologize to your brother or sister, right? There's not a lot of heart work going on there. Okay, I'm sorry. I lived that in my own life, and I now live it again and again with an 8 and 6-year-old in the house. But maybe mom was on to something. What would it look like to give Jesus the kind of room in your heart that transformation would begin to take form, take the form of you being able to admit to the person that you have wronged, that you've messed up, and that you desire to try to make that right in your relationship? Now, as we begin to think about that, and as somebody that we know we've wronged comes to mind, what so often begins to happen in our hearts is instead of God's love transforming us, this is where pride begins to step in. And so instead of thinking the way that we most would be able to offer transformation and grace to someone else, we begin to think about all the ways that it would be a really bad idea to admit that we've messed up and to seek to make it right. Pride is not one of the fruit of the Holy Spirit that lives in you because of Christ. When Jesus visits the home of your heart and you make more room for Him, there should be other fruit that grows there. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. These are the type of things that naturally well up as God is invited in close to our hearts, as the Spirit dwells within us and grows fruit. As that fruit grows, there is little room for pride. How might our homes, our workplaces, our schools, our neighborhoods, and our church be transformed if we begin to let Christ live through us by admitting when we've wronged and work to try to make that right with the person that we have wronged? I joked as we started about having our loved one checked by a doctor if we're to start living these sort of transformed lives as modeled by Zacchaeus. But I want to point out something that is commonly thought about Luke, the writer of this encounter that we have today. Many believe that Luke was a physician, and it's commonly thought that this gospel is written in such a way that Luke is trying to help us understand the way that Jesus is the great physician. And perhaps it's time for us, not our family members, to visit the doctor with open hearts and seek Him as the great physician that He could be. That we would seek Jesus and ask that He would help us understand what is it in our hearts that holds us back from being able to more freely admit when we are wrong. What holds us back from being able to do that and seek to make it right with others? We are not far from Easter when, in the event of Good Friday, we remember just how deeply Jesus cares about making us right with God. Let that touch our hearts in such a way that it would be our passion as those who are transformed by the gospel to make right the wrongs that have touched our lives. When we recognize a relationship where we have done wrong, and we can find our way past our pride, healing is found there, because not only have we invited the great physician into our hearts, but we've invited the transformation of Jesus Christ into that relationship. We join today at this table, and one of the ways that this table is often referred to is a table of reconciliation. And at this table, not only are we made right in relationship to our God, which what a great gift that is all by itself, but we receive the grace and the power to live reconciled lives with each other as well.